Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rose intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll discuss all the latest news revolving around the New York Giants. We'll also get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation via hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. A lot to certainly delve into, Paul, over the next hour as Eli Manning is piling up some accolades. He was named as a Pro Bowl replacement. He'll fill in for the injured Ben Roethlisberger. His fourth selection to be a Pro Bowl, third time he's actually taking part in the game, because last time I checked, 2011, there was a bigger priority that he had to take care of. So we'll get into that. He was also named one of three finalists for the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year Award. No Giant has ever won that award in the history of the franchise. We'll get into that. And we'll also delve a little bit into the postseason, as we now know the Panthers and Broncos will be squaring off in Super Bowl 50. But I think we should start, obviously, with the Giants-related news, Paul, and Eli Manning and Odell Beckham are both going to Hawaii then.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I've said all along during the course of the year that Eli was having a Pro Bowl caliber season. I really thought he didn't get enough respect when the voting finally came out and they said he was several alternates deep. Well, good for him that he's getting to go, because I just think over the course of the last two seasons, look, if you don't believe me, you can look at the stats. I mean, he's had two 90-plus quarterback rating seasons in the last 2 years since Coach McAdoo got here, and he's only had four in his career. So that gives you an indication of the high level he has achieved. And to me, there's no downside here. I think Eli Manning, I think he's got another two or three really outstanding years left in him. I don't see him quite on the decline quite yet. The arm strength is there. Remember, during the offseason, he went to see one of those baseball gurus who strengthens the arms of pitchers and decided that maybe that would be a way to kind of hold off Father Time and allow him to maintain the type of arm strength that he wants to have for an extended period. And I think it worked, because in my mind, I thought he threw the ball with more velocity and not just short stuff. I'm talking even the long stuff. More zip on the ball than I think I've seen in two or three years.
Well, remember, in the 2014 offseason, Paul, he's dealing with that offseason ankle injury. So that took him off the field. This season, different story. You mentioned he was working with a baseball mechanic, but also you add on top of that he was healthy. So he was actually out there during offseason workouts. I think that's a big reason why he put together the impressive numbers that he did. And also, year two in Ben McAdoo's offensive system, I'm sure also was a contributing factor.
Oh, I'm sure it was. And, you know, I just think that in watching Eli, the one thing that I like to stress to people all the time is about his football acumen and how smart he is and how much he studies and just hours upon hours upon hours of learning the game and figuring out everything about the game. But aside from that, I'm going to just tell you, physically, he's a gifted thrower. Now, we know he doesn't have fleet feet.
Yes.
Okay, we get that. Okay, I know he's never going to be confused with Russell Wilson. His legs are certainly not his strength. But, you know, Lance, I've watched this guy for how many years now? It seems like forever. You know, whether it's in practice or whether it's in games, there are times he makes throws that just should not be made. And yet he puts it right there. I mean, he's a special quarterback. And I remember Bill Parcells used to tell us all the time when Phil Simms was here, you guys are going to be sorry, because when he's gone, people are going to say the next guy, oh, he was no Phil Simms. And you will learn to appreciate Simms more when he retires. And Parcells was right. People started to appreciate Phil a lot more after he was gone, because look at what happened after that.
Yeah.
Kent Graham, Dave Brown.
All the different quarterbacks.
Danny Cannell.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the guys that they had to go through. And I hope that whoever's still out there talking bad about Eli, that the critics, the negative folks, who still don't think he's an elite quarterback, who still have any doubts in their minds as to whether or not he's going to the Hall of Fame, because I'm telling you, he's going. Okay? Enjoy it while he's here, because this guy's really good.
Well, when I have conversations with fans from other teams, Paul, you know, everybody always loves to speculate based on how the current quarterback is performing, if they go in a different direction, if they draft a quarterback, if they make a trade and bring in a veteran. And, you know, you always hear the phrase, it's not necessarily, you know, greener on the other side, you know, in terms of the grass. And you get caught up in, well, there's a better option there, and then sometimes you got to appreciate what you have currently in place. And I think that you could say that as a generic statement, what you just alluded to, for every team in the National Football League, quarterbacks specifically probably are not appreciated enough for what they achieve, for some of the stability they provide, until their careers are done, or the jerseys are hung up, or they're traded, or they leave town, and so forth.
And please, don't forget, durability is another major factor.
Oh, yeah.
When I start ranking a guy and I start saying, is he really just good or is he great? Durability is a huge factor, especially in today's game. And when you're talking about the Ironman streak that Eli's put together to play at his level for as long as he has and not miss the start, are you kidding me?
Durability is probably one of those statistics that's overlooked because it doesn't necessarily show up in a box score. You just take for granted, right, the guy's there. But Eli Manning hasn't missed one game in his entire career. Plus, I think the best way to put things into perspective, I don't have the number in front of me, Paul. How many different quarterbacks have the Redskins, the Eagles, and the Cowboys started?
You got a calculator?
During the tenure of Eli Manning. No, because it's funny, because every time Eli Manning starts a new season and, you know, there's articles up on Giants.com, we seem to be adding another quarterback to the list. This guy or this team started X amount of quarterbacks while Eli Manning is still under center and the only guy for the Giants. I think that says a lot about the landscape of the division and the landscape of the NFL. What Eli Manning has accomplished, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody else 25, 35 years from now, that's even going to be in that conversation in the durability department because guys get hurt left and right.
I mean, you talk about Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Brett Favre. Those guys, to me, stand out amongst all the other guys within the last generation or two in terms of their ability to stay on the field. Fran Tarkenton was another one. Tarkenton was absolutely unbelievable and his ability to stay on the field. And remember, he was not a big guy. Now, I know you probably don't remember.
Well, I mean, I know who he was. I can't say that I've broken
you didn't
down
watch
a film
him.
Like you.
All right, but you didn't watch him.
No, I didn't watch him
okay.
up close, absolutely.
To watch Fran was a diminutive guy, did not have great arm strength, but was incredibly intelligent, incredibly athletic, incredibly elusive. And maybe the best thing about Fran was that he understood that it didn't have to be pretty. It didn't have to be the way it was drawn up, but he was going to be able to make the play. Somehow, some way, he was going to make the play. And the pounding and the beating that he took. Now, you're going to tell me, well, I just gave plaudits to Eli because of today's game and how big and strong and fast guys are and how they're knocking guys out. Well, guess what? In Fran's day, comparatively speaking, he was a smurf. Okay? And guys would just absolutely level him, pancake him, beat the living daylights out of him. And Fran was always there to answer the bell. I believe there was only one year with the Vikings where he suffered a concussion and he had to miss a couple of games. But for a guy who ran around as much as he did and who got his hit as much as he did, Tarkenton's another one of those guys. And I know he's in the Hall of Fame, and I'm still boggled. Why did it take him so long? I'll never understand that because he should have been first ballot. But the point is, it's an underrated characteristic.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think that not enough credit goes to Eli Manning, considering the fact, think about this. You know, we've talked about the different generations of the offensive lines that Eli Manning has had. You know, we're beyond the David Deal, Kareem McKenzie, Sean O'Hara days when they put together that stretch of 38 consecutive regular season games. You know, now they've started to infuse youth. And there's been games, Paul, and you know this from following the team, where Eli Manning has taken his fair share of hits. And you would think, hey, he's going to miss a game or two, or the plantar fasciitis, you know, if you go back a few years ago, too. And he's played through all of that. I mean, I think about
the arm.
The arm, too. Well, I think of the one game to me that stands out just to show Eli Manning's durability. And this
San Francisco playoffs.
Correct. The 2011
That's
the NFC Championship game. I mean, the hits and the beating that he took in that game, and the fact that he, I think he attempted about 50-some-odd passes.
Similar to what Brady had to go through yesterday.
The other day, yeah. I think it's a perfect parallel. And I read it. There was a stat online, actually. I don't know if you saw this, Paul. Tom Brady was hit yesterday more so than any other quarterback at any time during the course of this regular season.
Yeah, it was 20 or 23 times, depending upon who you counted as the official number.
Yeah. So, I mean, that says it all. Offensive line play is so important because it doesn't just give you a chance to win. It also protects the durability of your quarterback.
Of course, Eli's game was in overtime.
Yes, which even adds more hits to the tally. But that's the game, to me, that really stands out, just to show you, you know, the toughness that he's able to display.
Let me build off of that for a second and transfer the talk to what you said about him being a candidate as the man of the year, one of the three finalists for the Walter Payton Award. And, folks, I know that a lot of you guys don't get to see these fellas away from the field. We do, of course, because we're here every day and in practice. Eli Manning is absolutely amazing at the way he relates to some of the young folks who come into this facility with all type of afflictions. I mean, you know, we've been in practice, and we've seen people come out to practice. And Coach Coughlin was always very, very much into, hey, we will do whatever we can to make these people feel good, to put a smile on their faces. If they've been afflicted with something and they've been invited to our home, to our facility, we're going to make sure that they not only feel welcome, but they feel special. And so we would watch as every week, it was usually on a Friday, where Coach Coughlin would always have an afflicted family, whatever the issue was that they were having, come to the facility, and the whole family would be welcomed. They'd have lunch. They'd come outside, and they'd watch practice from the sideline, and they'd get a better view than the media, by the way. They always got a good location, remember? They got a prime location. And every single time, Coach Coughlin would go over to that family, and he would greet them and make them feel like they were the kings and queens of the universe. And he would always wave over a couple guys, you know, if they weren't busy doing something in a drill. You know, if guys were, you know, some guys, their position wasn't up, they'd go over there. Well, let me tell you something. Every single time that I saw that happen, Eli Manning would be the last guy off the practice field because he would go over to that family and he would spend an extra 5 or 10 minutes with them, sign whatever autographs they want, take whatever pictures they want. The whole team would already be inside, and Eli would be out there with those people to make sure that their experience was one that they would never, ever, ever forget. And, you know, the guy's a superstar, the guy's a Hall of Famer, and so many of these guys who don't get it, who don't understand that the fans are still the fabric of the game, and that it's good to just be a good person sometimes. You know what I mean? We got too many bad people in too many professional sports leagues. It's good to just be a good person. And Eli would just go above and beyond every single time to make all these folks feel special. And so, you know what? I hope he wins the award. If he doesn't, it doesn't matter anyway because he's still a winner.
Well, it would be a historical note, as I emphasized off the top of the show, because no Giant has ever won this award. It was established in 1970. Then it was renamed after the late, great Walter Payton in 1999 following his death, the Hall of Fame Chicago Bears running back. And Manning, you know, he's been honored within the Giants organization, Paul, because between 2007 and 13, he's been the Giants nominee every single season. Last year, slight bump in the road in terms of him not getting the award, and then back here in 2015 once again being the nominee. So his work has been honored consistently.
Well, you mentioned the charities he already does in addition to whatever he does here.
Absolutely. And Mississippi, his state where he played college football, he and his wife have a residence there. You know, he set up some children's clinics there. You know, it's not just a New York presence. There are other states that he's heavily involved in, even ties to New Orleans going back to Katrina and everything. He's been heavily involved with the local community.
Children with cancer through the Hackensack Medical Center.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, he's – and this is a guy, folks, who is like 25-8. Forget about 24-7. He's 25-8 in terms of football. But yet, as much film as he watches, as much as he practices, as much as he throws, he finds time to do good for other people. I can't say enough about him.
So that award is going to be revealed the night before the Super Bowl during the NFL honors ceremony right before Super Bowl 50. The two other finalists, by the way, Niners wide receiver Anquan Boldin and Saints tight end Ben Watson. So this could be certainly a special offseason for Eli Manning, going to the Pro Bowl and now being named a finalist for the Walter Payton Award. All right, we have talked enough. Let's open up the phone lines, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Before I do that, though, just to put the numbers in perspective, and thanks to Dave Dominic, our producer, Redskins and Cowboys, 10 quarterbacks they've started since 2004. So that's 20 total.
Okay.
And then the Eagles, 11 on top of that. So there you
31.
Go. 31 different quarterbacks between the three other teams in the division, and the Giants have just had Eli Manning. I think that sums up durability just with that number alone. I don't think we need to add anything else to that conversation. All right, let's open up the phone lines here on a Monday edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for spending part of your Monday with us. Andre's in Rochester. Andre, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm
Hi.
Doing well.
Doing well, Andre. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I think Eli should win that award, only because if he doesn't win the reward, he's not going to care about it. He's still going to do his duty and do what he does.
And you're right. He will continue to do those things because that's the kind of guy he is. It's not about awards for Eli Manning. It's just about being a good person and being responsible to what it is that you stand for.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I have a question about the draft. You think if Miles Jack is still on the board at 10, you think Jerry Reese will pick him up?
Well, I think, you got to look at the trend, too. I always point this out in terms of the position that the Giants have targeted in the first round or in history. And when was the last time they took a linebacker in the first round, Paul?
Yeah.
I always point to that.
Banks.
Yeah. Our colleague. 1984.
Here's what I will say, all right? The Giants need to take a bona fide pass rusher, in my mind, with that first pick. They've got to get somebody in the front seven. I would prefer it to be a defensive end, but it's got to be someone in the front seven who can wreak havoc on the quarterback. I think that probably is the chalk line for me. I don't know anybody else that would disagree. Maybe there's somebody out there who would, but I think it's pretty obvious that's the way they got to go. Now, is he the right guy? I don't know.
I think you got to take into consideration, Andre, as I mentioned, the track record of the organization. That doesn't mean that the script is going to be changed this season. I mean, they could certainly go after a linebacker. I mean, Miles Jack is considered one of the top linebackers who's going to be on the board.
That.
Whether or not he's available at 10 remains to
don't
be seen.
Don't know about that either.
I mean, right now there's early mock drafts. Things are going to change based on injuries and free agency and so forth. But I would agree with Paul. I think getting a guy in here that's going to add depth to the defensive line, get to the quarterback, I think is one of the top priorities, considering the fact that, remember, JPP, Robert Ayers, who are two of your best pass rushers, are right now free agents and question marks, and that could certainly change the approach of the draft too, Paul.
Yeah.
Definitely. He could share a cover too. All right, guys, I'll let you go.
You got it, Andre.
Okay.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for tuning in. We want to remind fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's hear from Dean in Connecticut. Dean, welcome aboard. What do you got?
What's going on, guys? How are we doing today?
Hi. Doing well, Dean. How's everything with you?
Hey, not too bad. Another day, Monday. You got to love it.
Absolutely.
You said that Carolina hit Brady 23 times yesterday, if I was correct?
Denver, yeah.
There were two numbers.
Oh, Denver,
one was 23, one was 20.
In 2007, how many times did we hit Tom Brady in that Super Bowl? Because I remember counting over 20 times that we hit him.
Wow, you know
That's
what?
That's a good question.
We can look that up. That's not hard to find.
Because I remember it very well that, I mean, he was getting hit. He hit the deck at least. I want to go at least 21.
Let me put it to
times.
You this way. In both of the Giants-Patriots Super Bowls, there was similar sets of circumstances where the front four beat the stuffing out of him, and that's exactly what happened again yesterday. If anybody, and I mean anybody, wants to question old-school football 101 that says you need to build from the trenches, well, then guess what? You probably saw that tape yesterday. And I think you're on board now, okay? Because if you don't build,
I've always been on board with the way that you.
I'm not talking about
you.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about some doubters out there. You know, I'm sure. I recognize you. You're old school like me. That's cool.
Absolutely.
But there are people out there who, you know, they want to draft flashy tight ends in the first round. You know, they want to draft a running back in the first round. They want flash and dash. You know, the bottom line is, right now, if you don't have those trenches taken care of, you better not even think about those other positions. And yesterday
absolutely
was a great example, because in both games, the team that dominated the trenches won the game.
Yeah, Carolina too. No, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember, I'm not sure if it was Eli's first game, but I remember we were playing the Eagles, and I think it was Jeremiah Trotter. I'm not sure, but he got mollywopped. Like, Jerome McDougal. I was almost there.
Crunched Eli.
And I saw his facial expression, and I was beginning to think, it was like, is this the beginning of Eli's career? He turned out to be, in my eyes, he's going to go down as the best Giants quarterback, regardless if he wins another Super Bowl or not. But what we need to worry about is, who cares about these mock drafts with Ezekiel? I was taking the Ohio State running back. I think we need to worry about shoring up the offensive and defensive line. I mean, if we win the game in the trenches, we got Beckham. If Cruz can come back, we got a decent running game. But if you're stopping people, if your defense is holding them under 14 points a game, Eli can get that no problem. And that's what I'm worried about, is no flash and dash. Let's get Smash Mouth back, and that's how we're going to win some games.
Well, Dean, I would agree with you with respect to the defensive line and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. More so than the offensive line, because I think if you look at the offensive line right now, Paul, entering this offseason, you know, you have your three young players that you've drafted over the last few years in terms of Richburg, Pugh, and Flowers. It remains to be seen what happens with, you know, Jeff Schwartz. Obviously, from a health perspective, he's dealt with some injuries over the last few years. And Bobby Hart, you know, who I throw into the youth movement mix, Paul, I think he showed a lot, at least in limited action here, where, you know, he maybe could be a guy that provides some stability at right tackle or right guard. So, you know, you're looking for, at this point, some added depth, some added swingmen to provide more balance on that offensive line.
I tend to agree with you, and I know David Deal feels the same way in talking with him, that the Giants probably have a guy in Bobby Hart who's going to compete as the starting right guard in 2016. But you certainly want to enhance the competition at right tackle, because the other three spots, as you mentioned, are held down by young guys. Whether or not Jeff Schwartz comes back, who knows? Will Beattie, who knows? Both guys are coming off of injuries, and it's impossible to even predict what's going to happen to them unless you know physically where they stand.
Absolutely. Whereas the defensive line, and as Dean, our last caller, was alluding to, I think there's more question marks there right now, because you have more free agents on the defensive line than what you're facing with respect to the offensive line. That's why free agency is going to dictate a lot as to where the Giants need to go via the draft, because if you bring back JPP and you bring back Ayers, okay, now the goal is depth. Whereas if you lose one of those two, now you're looking for a legitimate starter to come in, whether it be via the draft or via free agency. All right, let's head back to the lines. Dre is in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how's everything going?
Hi. Dre, how's everything with you?
Hey, not much. Been tapping into my NFP dots and looking at the pending possible free agency. Look at, you know, I would love to have Muhammad Wilkerson come over to us. 26, he had 12 sacks last season.
He's a player,
you know,
man. He is a player.
He is.
I think any team in the NFL would like to have Muhammad Wilkerson.
You know, and he's a homer. You know, he'll just come over to the Giants. I know he'll love to stay in New York, and he signed last year for 4 years. $6.8 million. So,
you know,
I mean,
it's not impossible. Guys have gone across lines from the Giants to the Jets before.
Kareem,
I mean, to me, you know, Jumbo Elliott was one who went to the Jets. Of course, you remember when Kareem McKenzie came to the Giants. This does happen. It's not unheard of. So I would certainly be very interested in taking a look at him. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, this is probably the only season where I could say I don't want to bring in an extra tight end. I want to see what we have going on with Will Ty and Lacoste, you know. But when it reference to, just in case we just can't, you know, keep Ruben Randall, you know, Alshon Jeffries, you got Muhammad Sanu, you know, I like the height, 6'3", for Alshon Jeffries. But I think that the Bears would probably throw the house at him just to keep him and have a mentor, White.
Yeah.
Never know where we could go, you know. Because I'm looking at, you know, contracts so we don't hurt ourselves for the next coming year, so we don't have any cap issues. Even though we got money now, we don't want to hurt ourselves in the long run. You know, you got safety. You got Eric Berry. You know,
from the Kansas City Chiefs.
They're not going to let him get away.
Yep.
I don't.
I wouldn't blame them if they didn't want to let him get away, considering how he's played and what he's been able to overcome. And Dre, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you know, based on what you're listing and you were hinting at this, because you know you threw out a lot of notable names, and while the Giants are in a good cap space position, as Jerry Reese mentioned,
he's already spent all of it.
He's already well. That's what I was getting to. Since you have a lot of areas you want to upgrade or improve, if you spend the bulk of it on, let's say, Alshon Jeffrey, you got to remember you still want to address safety. You want to address the defensive line. So while it's good to have a lot of money, you still need to be careful with how you allot that.
No doubt.
So, Alshon is still on his rookie contract. He, you know, he signed a 4-year, 4.5. So, you really don't have to throw the house at him, so to
speak.
Well,
you don't know that. What is the market going to dictate? That's the key. It's not about what you think that he'll play for. What will the market dictate?
And look at a lot of wide receivers, they want to cash in after their rookie contract because they want that stability given the injury rate in the league. So
sure.
A lot of guys usually cash in regardless of maybe limited experience. And in Jeffrey's case, he has been a little bit banged up, but he's by far the top wide receiver on the market this year.
There's no question.
Right. Well, my last player, and Pete, I'm going to go with you with this. Sean Smith, in case you can't keep Prince. You know, he's 28, and he's 6'3". Yeah, this – what you think about Sean Smith,
you know,
cornerback?
I'm really torn in my personal opinion now on Prince. We talked about durability being so important before, and he hasn't been able to stay on the field. I like him very much. I think he's a smart player. He plays the run very well for a corner. He's a solid fundamental tackler. I like Prince Amukamara, okay? But it comes down to how high do you go with that number given that he has trouble staying on the field. So I don't know that I'm anxious to look elsewhere. I think I'd kind of like to see if I could keep him first, but it's going to have to be at the right number.
I agree. Thank you guys for taking my call.
All right, Dre. You
great.
Got it. Appreciate the phone call.
I did some checking on my phone while you were going through the next list of calls. And in Super Bowl 42, the Giants hit Brady 9 times and had 5 sacks. In Super Bowl 46, they hit Brady 8 times and had 2 sacks. But, you know, not 20, but enough that he felt the pain.
Yes. Well, and throughout the broadcast, and a lot of people, when they like to put things in perspective, you know, they're always saying the last time Brady took a beating like that was pretty much the 2 Super Bowls when the Giants had a rotational group of pass rushers. So I think it's fair to group those games together, but what Denver was able to accomplish yesterday was pretty much in a league of its own.
Well, you know, Carolina fans are going to disagree with this, and I understand that. I mean, they just belted the living heck out of the Cardinals. But I felt going into the weekend that the best individual unit of the playoff teams who are still alive belonged to the Denver Broncos defense. And I still believe that today, despite what the Panthers did to the Cardinals, because I just thought that the Cardinals, for whatever reason, did not show up. Carson Palmer was dreadful. I believe right now the Broncos, with that defense, I am just so impressed. They are so fundamentally sound, and they don't miss tackles. And their assignment sharp. I enjoy watching that Broncos defense. The new version of the Orange Crush, you know. I tweeted out the other day, I guess it was last week, Ben Grimm from the Fantastic Four. You know, he's a big orange guy, big rock man. They call him the Thing. It's clobber and die. Well, that's what the Reds, the Broncos defense was doing the last 2 weekends. And I'm really impressed with them.
It's funny because the way you describe Denver's defense is the way I've been describing Carolina's defense pretty much throughout the season. I would agree. Listen, to me, it's minutia. I think they're very close, Paul. I think Carolina plays fundamentally sound football, too. You can make the argument that Carolina may have the best linebacking unit in the National
Football League.
Well,
that's the thing. Their strength is more in the linebackers, and I think the Broncos have it more up front.
That's fine. I would give you that, although I would argue that Carolina's got some depth on the defensive line.
They're pretty good.
Case in point, Jared Allen's down, Coney Ealy comes in, and the level of production doesn't even fall off.
Well, to be fair, look at Jared Allen's numbers this year.
He was a complimentary player this year.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, Jared Allen's not going to play. What a tragedy. Jared Allen is not the same Jared Allen who terrorized quarterbacks, you know, 7 years ago.
True, but his sacks were impressive this season and some of his quarterback hits. So, I mean, given the fact that he's been up there in age, and remember, he was traded, what, 4 or 5 games into the season.
I get it, but he's not the same guy.
No, absolutely not. But I don't think Carolina acquired him with that mindset. They acquired him to add depth and be a rotational player.
I guess what disturbed me a bit is that when it was determined he was not going to play, it made headlines. Oh, Jared Allen's not going to play. Do you think he would have made a difference in that game yesterday?
They didn't need
him. The way that they just tore up the Cardinals?
They didn't need him.
No.
They're an extremely opportunistic defense, and we were talking about this when they played the Giants, Paul. 7 takeaways yesterday. I mean, you mentioned the Cardinals didn't show up. I would say Carolina's defense had a role in them not showing up.
Remember, we saw the Carolina Panthers here at MetLife Stadium, and they blew a 28-point lead to the Giants, who forced Cam Newton to reach into his bag of tricks to pull that game out in the final seconds. Look, I know it's hard not to be impressed with the Panthers after what they did yesterday, but I have to tell you, the Broncos defense has been doing that all year long, and they haven't been blowing 3 touchdown leads in the second half, you know, trying to squeeze their way into victories. So, you know, having said that, off of what happened this weekend, I wouldn't be shocked if the Panthers won the game, but I have great respect for what Denver's defense has done.
Well, Denver has done a really nice job stopping the run, getting to the quarterback this season. They're both top 5 defensive units, so I think it's a really good matchup on paper. But here's the other thing with Carolina, Paul. Remember, you know, I don't look at it just as the Arizona game. They beat up Seattle, too. Granted, they gave up that lead late, but they also manhandled the Seahawks the previous week, too.
Was it 4 times this year they gave up a second-half lead of at least 17 points? Is that the number that I heard?
That may have been in the ballpark. I don't know if did they give up a lead or maybe
squandered it to where they almost lost the game.
Correct, because Seattle, they led the whole way.
Yeah.
The problem is it dissipated.
You know what it is for me? I guess I saw them in person. You know, I was on the sideline. I saw them in person here at MetLife, and I wasn't just knocked down, totally flabbergasted with that team. You know, it's different when you see them in person. I never saw the Broncos in person this year. You know, it was only stuff from afar, watching highlights, watching them on the game of the week. And maybe that's why, you know, the Panthers that day when they beat up on the Giants, well, guess what? They didn't kind of beat up on them. They did, but then they didn't. And I wasn't thinking to myself, this is a Super Bowl champion. I'm sorry. I just wasn't. And I know that I have said, and I still do believe this, Cam Newton should be the MVP this year. I do believe that. However, having said that, I look at that team and I just don't think it's a Super Bowl champion. Yet they're 1 win away from doing it, and they very well might do it.
Well, and I think it says a lot about the team considering you look at their receiving core, and I'm not taking, hopefully, words out of your mouth, but you look at their receiving core, and there's really no name in that group with Kelvin Benjamin, their young wide receiver banged up.
Right.
Ted Ginn's essentially their number one
guy. And I've never been impressed with Ginn. I know he's got blazing speed. And the way that he tracked down Peterson after that pick.
It was a great hustle play.
He was 20 yards behind him.
He was all the way in the end zone. Yeah.
And he caught him. I mean, wow, 70 yards downfield. He caught him from minus 20. Incredible. But I've never been a Ted Ginn guy.
His numbers are not through the roof if you look at the box scores this season. But he's made a number of big plays. And remember, he's a special teams guy, too, which is his true value.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where he makes a huge difference, and we saw that yesterday, certainly, in the win against Arizona. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks so much for joining us here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, discussing Eli Manning's accolades, going to the Pro Bowl, one of 3 finalists for the Walter Payton Award, also getting into your questions, your comments about this past season, as well as what to look ahead with respect to the draft and free agency. Patrick is in North Carolina. Patrick, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well, Patrick.
Hi.
What do you got for us?
Well, here's the thing. Everybody's talking about the defensive line, and while that is the number one priority on defense, the other glaring need, and I love Spags, but the one thing that you've seen game after game is we got beat between the hash marks, like in the middle of the field. And I'm wondering, is that more so a scheme thing that we just couldn't overcome, or was that more so because of the players that we had filling positions? We had Jasper Brinkley, who did an admirable job stepping in at middle linebacker, and we never really had the main guy to play opposite of Collins at the safety position.
You just answered your own question.
You just answered
your own question. You have Landon Collins, who made his share of rookie mistakes. You had a mishmash at the other safety spot all season long, and you had middle linebackers, whoever it was in there, whether it was Beeson, Unga, or Brinkley, who were not really adept at pass coverage. They were all better run stoppers. You answered your own question.
Would it be more accurate or more of a better thing to go and get, say, an Eric Berry to solidify the middle of the field and then see who we can get at middle linebacker and try to take care of the defensive line during the draft?
I have no problem with signing a veteran safety to pair with Collins. In fact, I would advocate it because, to me, even if you spent another high draft pick on a safety, now you're telling second-year pro Landon Collins, guess what? You're the old guy in the secondary, and you're going to have to deal with another safety who's a year younger than you. I don't like that mix. I would much rather spend the money and get a veteran, top-notch free safety to pair with Collins so that he could learn under the guy.
And here's the other thing to take into consideration, and I agree with what Paul just said, Patrick, in terms of needing a veteran to pair with Landon Collins, and I brought this up on previous shows. You know, when everybody talks about linebackers, 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 keep in mind when so many teams spread everybody out wide, you know, how many times are three linebackers actually on the field? Mm-hmm. So therefore, to me, the bigger priority is if you have depth and versatility in your secondary, where you're probably going to utilize those guys on the field much more often than your linebackers,
sure,
that should at least influence your decisions when it comes to the draft and free agency.
The thing that's funny to me is Collins was almost the prototypical Perry Fuel guy when he used to play the three safety, because I've heard guys talk about him possibly being able to might transfer to weak side linebacker.
You know, the fans have been talking about that on the web, but no one from the Giants organization has breathed a word of that to me. So I don't know where that got cooked up from. But I will say this to you. If you're the Giants and you've got a safety position right now that has 16 total NFL starts among them, and guess what? They're all Collinses. Nobody else among the rest of their safeties has started an NFL regular season game. I would not be adverse to not only bringing in one top-flight veteran, but I wouldn't be adverse to bringing in another decent safety as well.
So who would be on your top guy, the top of your list?
Well, I
role.
Think, you know, you mentioned
Berry
because right now he's the top free agent available, but I certainly think that you'd have to consider Weddle from the Chargers, who has made it very clear he doesn't want to be there anymore, and it doesn't sound like they want him there anymore either. So I do think he would be available. That would be a gentleman I would certainly want to interview.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, well, thank you for your guys' time. I'll listen off air.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in, Patrick. I'm looking at the free agent safeties right now, Paul, in terms of who else is going to be on the market. You've got Tashawn Gibson from the Cleveland Browns. He's another one that certainly is going to be out there. James Ahedebo, who's been with the Ravens and a few other teams. He's an established veteran. Roman Harper, who right now is with the Carolina Panthers. He'll be out there. You know, those are some names who are experienced players.
Okay, but now it's not only the key is experience, but I also want to look at the age factor. Now, when you're looking at Weddle, he's 31, so he's a little bit on that 30-plus situation, which in theory you'd like to get him for a better rate because you're going to say, well, look, you're over 30 already. We're not going to pay you top dollar. But he's been to so many Pro Bowls, he's certainly going to want some numbers.
And his value is going to go up because
okay.
of that. Yeah.
But the key here is, you know, I immediately look at a 39-year-old, 32-year-old. I'm trying to throw those guys out because I want guys who are experienced, but I don't want them being – so experienced that they're already slowing down. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll mention this name, and this is a player that was with the Giants 2 years ago. Had a very good season with Philadelphia, Paul. Walter Thurmond, who moved from corner to safety.
Yes.
He really jumped off the page this season. Very opportunistic, very aggressive. Now, hey, maybe it had something to do with the Eagles' scheme. I mean, that certainly was a contributing factor. But for a player that changes positions within the span of a few months to be that productive, that certainly caught my eye. And he is going to be out on the market again. However, it goes back to his value probably now increases. I'm sure he's going to get a number of different offers as a result.
And the other thing is you don't know what the Eagles coaching staff wants now because that's been shuffled as well.
They're going to change defensive coordinators and so forth. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Brian in Virginia. Brian, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi. Hello, Brian. What do you got for us?
Hey, 2 points. Speaking of blowing leads, I do agree with you that we do need to upgrade our defensive line or at least make sure that we have a pass rush. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that one. But I'm one of the people who feels like your middle linebacker position for our middle linebacker position, it's like you said, it's been a mishmash of different people throughout the last couple of years. And the big difference between our Super Bowl years and the last few years that we've had is we haven't had a middle linebacker that's been there. We need somebody who's a boss in the middle of that field. So I do agree also that we need to put a veteran safety next to Landon Collins. But yeah, we really need somebody. John Beeson's been a liability just for the fact that he's always
hasn't stayed in on the
trainer's
field.
Room.
Hasn't stayed on the field. That's bad. I know.
Exactly. And you need – I mean, and we don't. I'm not saying we got to go out there and get Luke Kuechly, but we need somebody who's smart and who can stay on the field and who's relatively fast enough that he can help us out and give us some consistency in our defense.
With all due respect to this guy, okay, because he is a great guy and was a tremendous asset to this organization, Chase Blackburn was not going to any Pro Bowls, but yet he was a starting linebacker on a Super Bowl winning team here. And in fact, was great in covering Gronkowski on that interception in the second Super Bowl when they beat the Patriots. So, it's not about necessarily Hollywood name value, but it's got to be somebody in there who's going to be smart, tough, durable, and produces.
And can stay on the field, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. The second point I wanted to make, and to piggyback off your point about Eli Manning, he's our generation Phil Sims. From the time he came into the league, I've heard people talk about, his critics talk about who he's not. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not his brother. I think his biggest liability is his last name, really. Because if he wasn't a Manning, maybe people wouldn't have had this expectation or this false thing they got about him. But to me, he is the most durable quarterback out of all of them. He's the hardest quarterback to rattle out of all of them. You can see the look on Tom Brady's face once you hit him a few times that he's going to have a tough game. But if you ever take – and then you guys have seen that 49ers game where Eli just got the crap beat out of him, and he got more and more focused as the game went on. His chin strap was hanging practically up under his eyes, and he's calling timeouts, and he's focused on what's going on. You don't see that from other quarterbacks. So, and to me, he's the big game quarterback that you want when things get tough. So if you want to talk about who he's not, talk about that.
I will say this:
the guy
who, for me, even though he doesn't have the consecutive game streak that Eli has, but the guy for me who plays the quarterback position, who's also as tough as nails, and I'd go to war with him anytime, no matter how badly injured he is Ben Roethlisberger. He has done that time and time again. Yeah. They have scotch taped him together and thrown him back on the field, and he has found ways to compete. And I'm, as a player, I'm a big Roethlisberger fan.
I've put him right up there, especially what he did this past
postseason. The difference I see between Ben Roethlisberger and Eli's smarter because Ben doesn't know when to get down.
He's bigger and stronger, too.
They
can't take him down.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to look at the physicality, Brian, too. Let's factor that in. I mean, Ben is built like a brick wall compared to Eli, at least in terms of physique.
That's true.
Well, hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the
phone
call.
That was a fun call.
Thanks so much.
I enjoyed that one.
You brought up Chase Blackburn, and you mentioned the Super Bowl play. I also remember him for coming off the street and picking off Aaron Rodgers, too.
No question.
And that's another play that just goes to show you his savvy in the classroom. That's, to me, what stood out about Chase Blackburn. What he lacked in skill and talent, I think he made up for and then some with his studying habits and
so
forth.
He knew where to be.
Yeah.
And that was the best example that you could ever give. 3 days, I think it was, after he got off of his sofa, he intercepted Aaron Rodgers.
Right in the middle of the week, yeah. They brought him in before that game.
And he read it. He read the play. It wasn't about, being an NBA style of athlete. It was just he knew what was coming, and he jumped it.
And I want to say prior to that, I mean, Rodgers must have had like two interceptions on the season. His interception to touchdown ratio is phenomenal. And Chase Blackburn, right off the street, got the job done. Alan is in Washington, D.C. Alan, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How's it going over there?
Hi. Doing well, Alan. How's everything with you?
It's good. Good. A very disappointing season for the Giants and the fans and everybody there. But looking forward to next year, I think that's all we can do right now. And I know Cruz is under contract, but I know with his injury in the last 2 years, he's in the loop for maybe getting cut or traded. Or I just want to see, do you think he'll be on your 52 next year?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Cruz. My information is that, in fact, that calf procedure that he had back at the end of November went well, and he has begun his rehab, and I'm told everything is positive, and they are looking forward to his continued progress in the rehab. And as far as everybody's concerned, all systems are go unless he winds up hitting another detour. At this point, I'm told everything is gone according to plan. So that's positive news. It's optimistic news. You can only go by, you know, how he's feeling. At this point, you can't predict that he's either going to be great or that he's not going to be well. You can only say, what has he done to this point to match the medical people's expectations? And I'm told he is exactly where they wanted him to be in terms of rehabbing and getting back on the field. So that's somewhat of a good sign. It doesn't guarantee it, but it's somewhat of a good sign. So I think you'd like to have him in your plans.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need him. I mean, look how bad we were without a number two this year. I mean, Odell carried us for the most part, but, you know, that game he was suspended showed you the lack of talent we have at that position. I mean, Ruben Randle and those guys, I mean, they did an okay job, but they're no Victor Cruz, and they're definitely no OBJ. You know, I would love to have Cruz back at the right price, obviously, but I know that's not our decision.
No, that's business. That stays out of our hands.
That's a decision that, remember, Alan, both sides have to come to the table with respect to. This is not just, you know, all of a sudden one entity comes to the table, because Victor Cruz right now, he's under contract. So if you're Victor Cruz, you don't have to do anything right now. He's not a free agent. So, you know, what you're alluding to, what you're speculating about, that depends on both entities on opposite ends of the spectrum coming together and meeting on that topic. But as it stands right now, Victor Cruz is a member of this roster because he's under contract.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you guys. And I'm curious, I mean, I want both of you guys to give me your Super Bowl winner for Super Bowl 50. My personal view is I think Carolina will take it. I mean, I think they, even though a lot of people, they were a little bit seen as the, I guess Peyton is his last year. I think Carolina will do just enough to get it, to get the championship. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
All right, Al. Appreciate the phone call.
Great.
I've been high on the Panthers all season long, so I'm not going to follow a different script. I think that they'll win a very close game. I think it's going to be a defensive-minded battle. I'd be very surprised that this becomes an offensive clinic, but I think Carolina is going to do enough to maybe get a turnover off of Manning, and that could very well be the difference maker.
Yeah, I just wonder about Manning's lack of mobility and the fact that right now that Panthers defense is smelling blood. The way they just destroyed the Cardinals makes you want to pick Carolina, because that wasn't even a game. So it's very easy to pick them, and that's why they're 5.5 points favorites.
Correct.
I believe,
they're
in
the
Vegas,
only favorites
right
now.
I mean, I totally understand that. I think had they not destroyed the Cardinals and had Arizona not played as poorly as they did, maybe some people might see it differently, because I don't want to take any credit away from what the Broncos did. They just beat the unbeatable Brady-Belichick combination in a really, really hard-fought game, and that defense played extremely well. Now, they didn't crush the Patriots into the ground like the Cardinals got manhandled, but they did a great job. I would have to look at this more closely. I want to pick the Broncos, but again, based on a knee-jerk reaction off of what we saw yesterday, it's kind of hard not to pick the Panthers.
Well, here's the other thing. As impressive as Denver's defense was yesterday against Tom Brady and company, from watching that game, Paul, and I'm curious your perspective, I still got the feel this should have been a much more lopsided game. And the problem was Denver's offense, to me, was not taking advantage of enough of the opportunities that the defense presented itself with.
I thought
with.
The Patriots' defense really stepped up their game.
And I agree with you.
And played better than I thought they would.
Especially against the run.
Yeah.
They completely took away the run. Manning at one point had the longest run for
and
the Denver
yet,
Broncos.
And yet the Broncos have shown during the course of the last few weeks they can be more balanced. And when they are, they've got better balance than the Panthers do. I think.
In terms of defense or offense?
No, in terms of both.
In terms of both. But here's the thing. Let's look at it just on the defensive side. Wouldn't you say? I would argue Carolina's got a lot more firepower and a lot more depth.
Well, again, it would seem that way based on what we saw yesterday.
So my concern
But I don't want to take anything away from that Broncos front because, man, they are really, really good. And you know, their linebackers aren't shabby either.
No, not at all. Listen, they got a lot of depth there, too. I'm just looking at it from the offensive balance here. If Carolina could take away the run, which they've been very effective in doing, then that means that this game is likely going to be in the hands of Manning and the receivers making plays, whether it be the short screen plays and so forth. I like what Carolina has to offer on the back end of its defense more so than what New England presents on paper.
See, I don't like the Panther secondary. They were picking guys up off the street for the last 2 months, and yet they continue to produce. And
it's almost about this secondary.
It's almost laughable how that secondary has performed so well because these guys are a lot of dime a dozen guys they're throwing out there now. So again, I've been a non-believer in the Panthers being this good basically all season long, and it's kind of funny to say that because they only lost one game, but you know I just wasn't that impressed with them. And then I watched this game yesterday, and they crushed the Cardinals. That was just embarrassing if you're Arizona. So I don't know. I just don't know how I feel. I guess I'd have to break it down and actually put more time into it. Quite frankly, I haven't put time into either one of these teams for a few weeks now. I did look at the Panthers when they played the Giants.
Yes.
I never really did film study on the Broncos.
Well, when there's no Giants connection, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand the passion, the in-depth analysis is not there.
I got college basketball to do.
Understandable, but, you know, the fans want to hear the analysis of the Broncos and the Panthers. We'll give you another week.
By next week.
We got 2 weeks.
By next week.
That's what I'm saying. Next
okay.
Monday, a week from today, Paul will study the film
I will have broken down
a little bit
some
more.
Of it. I will
we'll
have studied some film.
Answer.
I promise you.
I'm on the record. I'm going with Carolina. I feel confident in that. But Paul will give a little bit more wiggle room. We can get back to more of your calls in a second here. But remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's going on, Len?
To you, Len?
Yeah, good. Everything's good. Digging out from the snow, but
we all are.
Looking, thinking, yeah. Thinking
we can
positive.
Relate.
You know, my lasting memory of Chase Blackburn is going to be the last Super Bowl when he was 40 yards down the field in the fourth quarter and intercepted that pass, jumped up in front of Gronkowski and intercepted that pass. And that is a play I think that will stay in my mind for the rest of my life.
It's a signature play. It really is. And you know what? You don't have to apologize for that at all because I bet you a lot of Giants fans feel the same way.
You know, I turned to I was in the stadium, and I turned to my wife and I said, if Chase Blackburn can make that play, the Giants are going to win this game. Book it. And, whatever happened, I guess I was right with that. But I don't know if it had to do with Chase's play, but it was just a good feeling that came from that play. Hey, listen, you know, the good news in having the 10th pick in the draft is there's going to be a heck of a football player there.
Sure.
And we are going to be able to address those three levels on defense, defensive line, linebacker, you know, take your pick, and the defensive backfield. Again, there's going to be a heck of a player there, and I think we'll get a starter and, somebody who can stay with the team for a long time. The name that keeps popping up in the back of my mind, and I know you guys are going to jump all over me for this and say, oh, we can't go there. Defense is too important. We got to go defense.
Uh-oh.
I just keep thinking of Ezekiel Elliott, and I keep saying to myself, 5 years from now, of all these guys coming out this year, who is most likely to be the most productive over that 5-year period of time and step in and be productive from day one? And it just might be Elliott. I know. We got to address defense first. What do you think? Am I way off on that guy?
Len, to me, you have depth right now at running back, so I just don't see it as a priority. And here's the other thing. This is my opinion. This has nothing to do with the organization philosophy.
Yeah, okay.
I would never take a running back in the first round. I don't care if he is Walter Payton coming back from the deep roots of the earth. In my opinion, and it's nothing against any of those individual players, I'm not devaluing that position. I think the injury rate, Len, is so high at the running back position, it's not worth the gamble of taking a player in the first round at that spot. You want to take a guy in the second or the third round, hey, I'm all for that. Provide more competition and depth. In round one, I would shy away from any running back, regardless of their pedigree and what you think they could project to be down
the
road.
Now, what you're not calculating here is that Len's already told you 5 years from now, he's still going to be a productive kind of player. Of course, running backs, a lot of them don't even make 5 years in this league.
That's my concern.
So you guys are coming from different angles on this one, and I'm going to tell you flat out, no way in the world am I drafting a running back in the first round. In fact, I'm probably not taking a running back at all.
All right, let me say, that was just my opinion. And
it's okay.
I keep thinking of those great Ohio State running backs, and I think this guy's going to be something special.
Get yourself a right tackle that'll pave the way for a running back. How about that first, Len?
Yeah, okay. All right, listen, I understand where you're coming from. I don't have any, again, the good news, at number 10, there's going to be a heck of a football player. Let me just say something about Shane Vereen. You know, watching the Patriots yesterday, when we got into the fourth quarter, Brady was paying attention to two players. He was paying attention to Gronkowski, and he was paying attention to the running back, White, who essentially is a guy who, you know, I think Belichick saw White as a replacement for Vereen.
Yes.
This is the guy who can be the next Shane Vereen. And how many times did Brady go to White? I mean, either coming out of the backfield, in the slot, flanked out wide. He went two plays in a row. He went to White, flanked out wide. We keep talking about, we got to get more out of Shane Vereen. A number of callers and maybe even you guys have expressed trying to get more out of Vereen. Maybe that's the way you do it. You get him on the field in first down and you put him all over the field. Not just carrying the ball, but slot, flank that wide. I mean, coming out of the backfield to catch a pass. I'd love to know. He caught a number of passes yesterday, but I'd sure love to know how many targets.
For James White, you're talking about, I can bring up the numbers. The one thing I would add, though, Len, to your point, I think they were envisioning Deion Lewis to be the replacement of Shane Vereen. Suffered a season-ending injury.
True. Yeah.
White was a little bit more back on the depth chart. They have Brandon Bolden and James White. But to me, and I understand exactly where you're coming from, they said to themselves, we lose Vereen, Deion Lewis now is the next man up. With LeGarrette Blount, that's going to be our 1-2 punch. Unfortunately, Lewis got hurt. He suffered a season-ending injury.
Well, Lewis was having a terrific year.
Absolutely.
There's no question about that.
I'm
just thinking about the model, the way they went. It doesn't seem, there's just somebody. Maybe that's the way you use that pass catching back out of the backfield. How do we get more out of Vereen? Who do we not throw to? Who do we not hand the ball to?
Well, Eli Manning, Len, I didn't mean to cut you off. Eli Manning will always argue, listen, I'm going to take what the defense is going to give me. I don't go into my game thinking Shane Vereen's got to get 8 targets
and
for us to
be
successful.
Eli averaged almost 45 throws a game this year. They threw it a lot.
They did, indeed.
Yeah, he did.
And
part
of that was because of the rushing struggles. First of all, I want to answer your question, Len. I just looked it up. I didn't even realize it was this many. James White was targeted 16 times yesterday, believe it or not.
It was one time White was flanked out wide in the fourth quarter and went deep. It looked like the exact same play. In fact, I think the announcers.
You're 100% right. I do remember that sequence. Yeah. And now, I'm not saying that that's a recipe for success, that Shane Vereen should be running wheel routes, down the right sideline or left sideline every single game. Let's put things in perspective here. I would agree with you that Vereen, I think, is versatile enough that you try to move him around. And, Paul, I would say I think the Giants tried to do that, but sometimes it was just a matter of pass protection, getting rid of the football quickly.
Yes.
He just couldn't get Vereen involved.
I agree with that. And, the funny part is the Patriots' offensive line broke down in a bad way yesterday as well.
Oh, my gosh.
And Brady was fighting for his life. And there were a number of times where these targets were targets just because he was getting rid of the ball. They weren't necessarily all quality targets.
Yeah.
Listen, I have new appreciation for our offensive line play after watching the Patriots offensive line play yesterday.
That was
simply awful.
It's still one in the trenches, Len. Please don't forget that. It's still one of the trenches.
I understand that. I just keep thinking Ezekiel Elliott. Hey, listen, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, you got it, Len. Appreciate the phone call.
You.
Thanks so much. It's the game of putting things in perspective, Paul. And I think Len just hit it right on the nose. When you look at your team, just look at the division next to you, look at the team that's on television on the day of the week that your team's not playing, and you see how their offensive line performs. And that doesn't mean that there's not room for improvement on this team. Don't get me wrong. That's not my message here, but I think it you got to look at it the fact that there's teams dealing with very similar issues, if not worse issues, when you compare it to perhaps what this team is dealing with.
And, you know, the other factor here is that on any given week, it seems as though because of the way injuries have now played such a significant role in teams' fortunes, what you think is one team one week isn't the next team the next week, because things change so dramatically because, let's say, one guy is out of the lineup. It's quite ridiculous, but that's what the NFL's become. You know, what the Patriots were yesterday wasn't what the Patriots were in September, and vice versa. It just doesn't work that way anymore in the league because there is usually such a drop-off to your backup guys. Salary cap does that to you.
And while everybody would point out each and every season that New England is unique because it's the exception to the rule, they have guys that go down, all of a sudden the depth chart helps out. This season, keep in mind, you know, they didn't just lose Rob Gronkowski.
No.
They lost Amendola. They lost Edelman, Deion Lewis.
Missing pieces throughout the season.
They must have lost at least five teams worth of offensive linemen, it seemed. I mean,
yeah.
I think they had like 30 different configurations
on
the
crazy.
Offensive line this year.
It was crazy.
Unheard of.
Yeah.
I want to close out the show, though, with a tweet or two before we wrap things up, because I know there's some of you that can't get in on the phone line. So let's just real quickly run through a few thoughts here on Twitter. Tom says, at Tom Przybylinski, I know I butchered that, Tom, my apologies. I think Victor Cruz deserves another shot. Definitely what he has done in the past buys him my patience for another season. Okay, let's move along here. AJ Marshall at AJ Marshall 3. Bromley and Hughes, Jay Bromley, Monterey Hughes under contract. So we need a defensive tackle opposite Jonathan Hankins, whether it be free agency or the draft.
Yeah, interesting thought because Cullen Jenkins, of course, is an unrestricted free agent. And, you know, you just don't know what his future holds.
That's why we throw the defensive line in as a grouping, not necessarily defensive ends versus defensive tackles. Let's just take a quick glance here. Donald at Tag Rocket, when drafting defensive players, we need to draft the fastest player available at each defensive position we pick. Doesn't matter what round. So he's arguing speed should be a priority this offseason.
I would only say this. Be careful. Sometimes speed does not necessarily equate to production. I'm looking for the most productive players at each position as opposed to the quickest.
All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets over these last 60 minutes. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running tomorrow, as each and every weekday we bring you the latest with respect to the Giants. It'll be you and John Schmelk tomorrow,
yep.
I believe. And then we will carry on with the rest of our schedule the rest of the week. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. For Paul DeTino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35-30.
Well, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.